How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 94 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. And you can leave a review once you're on that page as well. And find us on audioboom.com, too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports app on the site. And you can find all my Thunder coverage right there. That's my hub for all my work on every single day of the week, Monday through Friday. Thunder coming off three-game winning streak right now. They just beat the Knicks in New York on Monday. So Monday after the game, we recorded a podcast wrapping up that 112-103 win with Jared Dubin, who's Locked On Knicks host and writes for about a million different places. This is my first podcast not with Jared since last week. So congratulations on not having to listen to Jared anymore. I really hope that Jared is like a rogue listener to my podcast and can hear that solid dig. Anyway, just me today. Solo podcast. I am currently commuting back from New York. The beauty of being a beat writer is you're traveling all the time. So sometimes it's, now that we're like getting into the meat of the schedule, like it's not always going to be me recording on a solid enough mic with great sound and all that kind of stuff. I hope it will. I hope it'll be better than it's been this week. But it was raining like crazy in New York all day. I had delays. I flew into Dallas because in Thanksgiving week, it's just so much cheaper to fly direct into Dallas than it is to connect into Oklahoma City. So now I'm driving back from Dallas. Yes, this whole thing has been a complete pain. It's been a pain of a day. I'm recording this on my phone. Second straight podcast now, recording on my phone. I think this one will be a little bit better because yesterday with that Jared sound, we'll see how it sounds after, I guess, when I'm done recording. But that Jared sound was like off my cell phone and he was recording it off a cell phone call. At least this one, like I am recording directly into my phone. It's just me. Anyway, this is going up Wednesday. I'm going to put it up as soon as I get back home, whenever that may be, because Dallas is a solid 3.25-hour drive. Like, you know what? You know what's amazing? Here's something from the Midwest. People from the Midwest are just like this. Like, people from the Midwest can drive for 3 hours, and that's like a normal drive to them. They have no problem just driving for 3 hours, and it's totally cool. And for me, like, 3 hours is such a hike. Like, that's a legitimate drive. And the fact that it's like, oh, you can just fly into Dallas and drive. For me, that's like, the equivalent that I make is it's the equivalent, I'm from New York, and it's the equivalent of somebody saying, like, yeah, just drive to Boston and fly out of Boston. That's insane to me. Thunder play the Wizards Wednesday night. Scott Brooks return game. I guess we can talk about Brooks first. Thunder have won 3 in a row. They're at 11-8. Wizards right now, I believe. And this is, normally I write stuff down, but I'm driving. So I've got my phone on my lap, and don't worry, I'm being safe. Two hands on the wheel, phone on the lap, speakerphone, all normal stuff. Wizards are 6-10, I believe. Scott Brooks return game, though. That's really the big story here. It's Brooks took last year off, signed a 5-year deal to coach the Wizards this summer. That's obviously been one of the things with the Thunder this year is there are so many return games. Like, it's Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka. You know, we make jokes about Deion Waiters, but they're, you know, Waiters was a guy who was a rotation guy who left and comes back, and now it's Scott Brooks. And Brooks, I know Brooks had, look, I wasn't covering the team when Scott Brooks was here. I don't know Scott Brooks. I've heard a lot about Scott Brooks. People speak very positively about Scott Brooks as a guy. Like, just about everybody you talk to about Scott Brooks just says, like, how good of a guy he is. I don't know Scott Brooks. I can't comment on that kind of stuff. I was covering the NBA when Scott Brooks was in Oklahoma City. I was not covering the Thunder, so I don't have personal experience with Scott Brooks because Billy came in last year and I came in the middle of last year, so he's the only Thunder coach that I've ever covered in my time on the beat. But Scott Brooks, I assume he will, and I hope he does get a favorable response when they call out his name on the PA before the game on Wednesday night. You know, one thing that I always think is kind of weird about starting lineups, I always think it's so weird that they say the coaches during starting lineups. And the reason is not because of the concept of saying the coaches is weird. Like, acknowledging the coach is fine, but the way they do it is so strange. Every single arena in the entire league, they do it the same way. They get really, really hyped for the starting lineup and the, you know, and now starting at point guard, Russell Westbrook, and everyone goes crazy, and they do it for five players, and everyone goes crazy, and the lights are off, and they've got promo videos playing, and they've got graphics up of the players when they say their names up on the big board, and it's this huge spectacle, and then the lights go off, and the guy basically turns off his, like, pumped-up announcer voice and just goes to his regular voice, and everyone goes into the huddle, and then is the most afterthought way possible. The PA guy goes, and now coaching the Thunder, Billy Donovan. And no one in the stands reacts. Maybe, like, three people applaud, and, like, one of those people is doing it ironically. It's so weird the way they announce the coach. But when they announce the away coach for the Wizards on Wednesday, I imagine we're going to get a little bit more of an applause than we normally do. I just... 7 years of Brooks, a finals appearance, three Western Conference finals appearances. And one of the things about the Thunder, I mean, people talk a lot about, obviously, just the success that Sam Presti had drafting during that 3 or 4 year span when he took Durant and he took Westbrook and he took Harden and he took Ibaka. And it's, you can really make an argument. I said this when I was on 107.7 The Franchise on Tuesday. We were talking about this. Like, you can make an argument that was the greatest drafting run for any GM in the history of the league. Like, not only is that not a replicable process that Sam Presti went through drafting those guys, like, that may have never happened with anybody ever when we talk about the history of the NBA. Like, I don't know if any GM has ever had that great of a run. Now, you might have to ask, like, Curtis Harris, who's a basketball historian, who's better at that stuff than me, and maybe I'm forgetting something that happened in the 1950s or whatnot. Like, maybe the Celtics in the 60s were better over a 3 or 4 year span or something like that. But off the top of my head, like, it's certainly one of the greatest drafting runs by a GM ever. There's no question about that. But at the same time, something I think the Thunder don't get enough credit for, I think people assume sometimes you draft a player and then he's either great or he's not great, or he's good, or he's not good, or he's above average, or he's not above average. And they put the onus on the player. Like, once you're drafted, that's it. It's all, I think, publicly, in terms of the public perception, it's all on that guy being drafted, and then that's it. That's the only way to judge the draft pick. But the Thunder did a great job of developing and harvesting that drafted talent. You know, players can go to wrong teams. Like, you can be drafted into the wrong situation. Look, Kevin Durant was going to be a star probably wherever he went. A lot of people some people, like LeBron James, didn't matter who he was going to be drafted by. LeBron James was going to be LeBron James. But players like Serge Ibaka, who was really raw when he came into the NBA, if Serge Ibaka goes into a bad situation, maybe he doesn't become Serge Ibaka. If even Russell Westbrook, like, look, right, it sounds crazy now because he is so, I mean, from a pure tool standpoint, just from athleticism and natural ability, like, is there anyone in the league who can rival him just from an athleticism standpoint? Like, it sounds crazy to say now because he's just, become Mr. Triple-Double and maybe the most dynamic player in the league on a night-to-night basis. But when Russell Westbrook went fourth, like, a lot of people said that was a reach. And the Thunder, obviously, it was a great draft pick, and they identified something in Westbrook that a lot of people who said that was a reach didn't necessarily identify at that time. And they turned out to be about as right as someone, as any organization can be about a player in drafting a guy fourth. But, like, there was player development in Russell Westbrook. Look, people didn't know if he was a one or a two. That was one of the criticisms. There were definitely some organizations who would have handled him differently. Maybe played him at the two. Maybe tried to eliminate some of his recklessness on the court. And in doing so, maybe eliminated some of the positives, which come from the same traits that produced those, like, young, you know, Westbrook reckless turnovers and that kind of stuff. And the Thunder kind of embraced that. You know, Scott Brooks was a big part of that. And that's kind of what I'm coming back to. Like, Scott Brooks, in developing Westbrook, in developing Steven Adams, in developing Ibaka and Durant and James Harden and a lot of these guys, you know, Andre Roberson, like, finding a role for Thabo Sefolosha, who was not drafted by the Thunder, but who is a guy who is in search of a real role. Like, Thabo Sefolosha didn't become the Thabo Sefolosha that we knew him as until he came to the Thunder and started playing for Scott Brooks. And that goes to the whole organization. It's not just Scott Brooks, of course not. It's the whole organization. It comes from Presti down. That's an organizational trait. It's not an individual one. But Scott Brooks was undeniably a massive part of that. And I know people criticize a lot of his X's and O's. Some of it legitimate. Some of it I actually disagree with. You know, some of the late-game offense stuff and that kind of stuff. Like, look, when you have Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, like, those guys are going to handle the ball. Those guys are going to take a lot of shots. They're going to score. Like, that's just the way it's most likely going to work. And there are certain things he could have done better, and there's no question about that. But he was a good defensive coach. Still is, even though the Wizards are, you know, below average in defensive efficiency right now. They're in the bottom half of the league, I believe, in points allowed per possession. But he did 7 years in Oklahoma City. Had a winning percentage over 600 in those 7 years, and that was after going 22-47 in his first year after taking over for PJ Carlissimo. And he really did a great job at developing talent. And I think that's why the Wizards, one of the big reasons the Wizards threw so many years and so much money in him this offseason, because they still had Wall and Beal, and, you know, you have to mend those guys together. And Otto Porter's a young talent, too. And yeah, so far, it hasn't worked. Through 16 games, it hasn't worked. And I think the issues in Washington run a little deeper. And it's a different type of organization than the Thunder were when Scott Brooks took over, you know, 8 years ago, whenever it was. But I think Thunder fans should be appreciative of what Scott Brooks did during his time in Oklahoma City. I think he did a nice job during his time, and really his fingerprints were all over those teams in terms of the way that he produced talent. Ooh, there's construction. You hear that one? I don't know what you can and can't hear. I have no idea what this mic picks up. So, ooh, more construction. So, what a weird way to record a podcast as I'm driving back from Dallas. A strange way to, what a weird job I have. Like, it's such a weird, like, how many people have jobs like this? Like, most people are just sitting at desks. Something like, I just, like, wonder what it would be like to have a normal job. It's just weird. It's a weird job that I'm talking to myself in a car for 15 minutes. I'd be doing that normally, I guess, but I wouldn't be recording it. Let's talk about the game a little bit, too. So the Wizards are weird. I think that if you've watched the Wizards really in the last year and a half, you will understand that just blindly saying the Wizards are weird is kind of an accurate way to describe what the Wizards are. They are weird. They have talent. Like, John Wall is great. I know people have kind of forgotten that John Wall is great because Washington didn't make the playoffs last year and they got to a really slow start. They were much better at the end of the year, but they finished 41-41, didn't make the playoffs, and they're under 500 to start this season. And they've been a general disappointment. But like a couple of years ago, it was a different team. There were different role players, but like a couple of years ago, this team came pretty darn close to making the Eastern Conference Finals. Really close. And it's not like it was a 50-win team or anything. I think they won 45 or 46. But this team came real close. Like they almost beat the Hawks in the Eastern Conference semis, which would have been an upset. That was a 60-win Hawks team, but it was a 60-win Hawks team that didn't look that impressive against the Pacers and didn't look that impressive against Washington. And Washington had a legitimate chance. And game they lost in six to the Hawks on one of the more game six in Washington was like such an amazing finish, underrated game. I think it's been forgotten over the last 2 years where Paul Pierce's three was still on his fingertips when it left his hands. And man, what a great game and what a way to end a series. But Washington has young talent. Wall is still awesome. I don't think he's at his peak. And I think because he's been around for a long time, because he left after his freshman year, people have now turned the not yet at his peak in some ways into, I don't think he's really unfairly criticized, but I think some people have turned the not yet at his peak thing as a way to criticize, as a look at John Wall, he still hasn't reached his peak type of way, as opposed to a, oh my gosh, look how good John Wall is, and he's still young enough that he hasn't even reached his peak yet. I think there's a pretty good chance that he will get there. Like, I still don't see why he won't. He's shooting the ball a lot better this year from three, which is something that was always a weakness for him. He's always been a reliable defensive point guard. He's just a tremendous athlete. You know, you think Russell Westbrook is fast. Like, John Wall, I don't know if he's faster than Russell Westbrook, but he's one of the only guys in the league who I think can match Westbrook's speed with the ball in transition. He's just so fast. It's unbelievable to watch him. And him versus Westbrook is a really fun point guard matchup. He's great scorer. Historically, he's great at creating corner threes. He hasn't been as good at that this year. And I'll be honest, I haven't studied Washington quite enough. Like, I was going to do my Washington film study today and sit back and watch a bunch of John Wall and watch a bunch of Brad Beal and go through all that stuff. And because of the travel delays and stuff, I didn't have a chance to do that. So unfortunately, cannot tell you exactly why Wall hasn't been as good at creating corner threes this year, but he hasn't. The Wizards don't really take a ton of those shots. The Wizards' offense is, it's inefficient, but it's efficient considering the types of shots that they're good at, if that makes any sense. They have like, they're below average in offense, but they're not like horrific. I think they're like 18th or 19th, which isn't really where you want to be when you have John Wall and Bradley Beal, who's been healthy for most of the year. But they don't create a lot of threes. They're like all the way at the bottom of the league in 3-point attempts. They just don't take a lot of threes. Their percentage isn't so bad because Wall is shooting a good percentage this year, and Beal's obviously a really good shooter, and Markieff Morris, though he's not been efficient this year, and he's not having a good year. He's been shooting pretty well from three, and Otto Porter, who, like I said before, I like as a player, is shooting well from three too. But the Wizards, they don't really create a lot of 3-point shots, which is a problem within their offense, and partly because of that. And partly because, like, aside from Wall, like, no one gets to the free throw line, which is really an issue. So they're not getting the line. They're not hitting threes often, which is like they're not getting those extra points. And that's kind of those extra points from three pointers and from free throws. Those make or break an offense. Like, if the Wizards got to the line more and they actually were able to create threes and turn some of their mid range shots into threes, that's a huge difference in their offense. Like, all of a sudden, we're talking about an offense that's slightly below league average to an offense that's slightly above league average, probably, depending on how drastic that is, maybe more. But they don't really create those threes. Morris has been down this year. He's shot well from three, but he takes a lot of mid-range jumpers, and he just can't buy one to save his life. I think he's like 30% from mid-range, which is really, really not good. Like, that means if you're shooting 30% on mid-range shots, assuming that the foul rate, the amount you get fouled, is negligible, you're basically churning out, you know, 0.3 points per every possession that you end in a Markieff Morris mid-range shot, which is just really just not what you want to see from possession that is tremendously below average, considering, you know, when the rest of their half-court possessions, they're somewhere between like 0.85 and 0.9 points per possession in the half-court, which is not great, but also, you know, just is so much better than what you're getting from those possessions that end in the Morris mid-range, and that's something that's hurt them, those mid-range opportunities. But really, if the Wizards just adjusted, and it's not just like find a way to get to the line, you have to get to the rim more, and that gets you to the line more, and you have to find other ways to create threes. But that's really, at least statistically, what's pulled down the Wizards' offense this year. They've been below average defensively. They're not really bad. Like, Gortat is solid enough, and Wall does some stuff, and Porter does stuff. Really, the reserves have just, like, the Washington reserves are really what pulls them down. Like, the starting lineup can hold its own for the most part. But, like, so here's a crazy thing. The Wizards have only four guys who have true shooting percentages over 50%. Now, I don't know if you have, like, a measure of what is a good and bad true shooting percentage, but I'll tell you this. Like, league average, I don't know exactly what league average is this year, but usually it's around 53, 54%. True shooting percentage is just a measure that captures your efficiency with all of your types of shots. So it counts for twos and threes and how many free throws you're making. And it's really, in my opinion, it's the best way to measure. It's the best simplistic stat to measure efficiency. And the Wizards only have four guys who are over 50% right now. And they're all in their starting lineup. It's Wall, it's Beal, it's Gortat, and it's Porter. And Gortat and Porter have been tremendously efficient this year. They're both over 60%, which is elite. Especially from Porter, who's a wing, and is, you know, like 50-something percent from the field and 38 from three, and has been real good. But man, that's it. Then they fall off. Like, Morris has been horribly inefficient this year, which has really been a problem for them. And off the bench, it's just a bunch of guys. You know, Marcus Thornton has not been a good enough scorer for them off the bench right now. And you know, Trey Burke is really not playing a lot at all. And no one else in their rotation is no one else who's seen consistent time in their rotation is scoring at anywhere near a league average efficiency, which is a pretty amazing thing. Defensively, they're interesting because they haven't had Jan Mahimi, and Mahimi was a big offseason signing for them. Something that they did this offseason, they almost had a similar approach to the offseason in some ways that the Thunder did. They loaded up on a lot of big men. They kept Gortat, they kept Mahimi, which there's obviously some stylistic redundancy there between those two guys, but Gortat's having a really good year. He's a good player. He's an underrated player. I mean, he's a great rebounder, and he's been rebounding the heck out of the ball this year. And he's got good touch around the rim. He shoots well from the mid-range. He's a really good pick-and-roll player. He is an underrated player. He's a really good center, but they gave $64 million to Mahimi, which I didn't think was an egregious amount for Mahimi. I mean, this is a market where, you know, Gorgui Dieng got that amount. Timofey Mozgov got basically that amount. I didn't think that was such a crazy price, but considering the context, you know, that's a lot for a backup center, and now Mahimi's had knee issues. He's played one game this year. He may or may not play on Wednesday night. As of the time I'm recording this, now maybe by the time you listen, it'll be a little different. But as of the time I'm recording this, he's questionable for Wednesday night against the Thunder. So we'll see how that goes. He's played one game, and he set out the Wizards' last game after playing in that one. But he's a really good defender. He was, I mean, when you look at how the Pacers finished third in defense last year with Mahimi as their center, and they've really fallen off this year, and you look at a lot of the things they're doing differently this year, and look, there are other things too. George Hill's not there, and you know, they lost Frank Vogel, who's one of the best defensive coaches the NBA has, period. But Mahimi was just a massive part of their defensive identity. And if he plays, I don't know how many, you know, if he's healthy, I don't know exactly how many minutes. I don't know how they plan on using him and Gortat, and I don't know how many minutes Mahimi ends up playing. But any amount of minutes, he's going to be able to help that defense. He's a really, really good defensive player. He's a legitimate rim protector. He's a legitimate defensive anchor. And I know he's not a huge name, so people didn't, you know, love that contract. But he is a really, really good defensive player, I think, no matter where you put him. And Scott Brooks has experience, as we know, of working with good rim protectors and using good rim protectors to his advantage. And I think that's something that he'll take advantage of with Mahimi whenever Mahimi's healthy. Now, obviously, they're not in that case, but I think the Wizards' defense will end up down the line being a little bit better, assuming Mahimi recovers and they can use him a little bit better. But if he doesn't play on Wednesday night, then that's something that's a little bit of a help for the Thunder, because that defense, again, isn't quite as good. But we'll see if the Thunder bench players can take advantage of the Wizards' bench, because that's something, if they're turning it over, if they're missing shots, the Thunder are getting long rebounds, maybe Oladipo can get out on the run a little bit. I think Kanter could possibly, if Mahimi does not end up playing, I think Kanter, you know, this could be a nice little matchup for Enes Kanter. I think he could end up taking advantage coming off his probable best game of the season. He had a season-high 27 points against the Knicks, and just really looked unstoppable down low in that game in New York. He was awesome. And he's had some off games of late, so it was I'm sure the Thunder were excited to see Kanter kind of come back and have a really, really strong offensive game, and I think that could continue against Washington on Sunday. That's it. No one needs any more of me. Let's enjoy the game tonight. And I'm going to be back with you tomorrow. Before I go, you can just find me on Twitter, at Fred Katz, F-R-E-D-K-A-T-Z. Log on to normantranscript.com, like I said at the top of the show. Check out Thunder Road, that's my blog there. You can find me every day of the week, like I said, Monday through Friday. Going to be back tomorrow. So the Thunder are off after the Wizards game for, what is it, 3 days. I can't remember the last time they had 3 days off. Like, I imagine they're going to have at least one day without practice during that stretch. I don't know for sure, but I'd expect that Billy Donovan would play it that way. They haven't had 3 days off between games in a little while, so nice opportunity to rest. They have the Pelicans coming in on Sunday, so that'll actually be a fun one. The Pelicans are playing good basketball right now after their incredibly slow start. They're playing really well since Jrue Holiday, who is also tremendously underrated. Like, maybe the most, and when he's healthy, Jrue Holiday is really freaking good. Anyway, I've got two podcasts after this one to talk about Jrue Holiday. I'll let everybody go. You don't have to stand me anymore. I'm going to get back to driving. I shouldn't say get back to driving. I've been very responsible. The phone is on my lap the whole time. Don't text and drive. Don't look at your phone and drive. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
You are a mighty fortress of supreme knowledge. Progressive Direct has not only revealed their rates, but those of their competitors. If you were any more in the know, you would be drowning in, you know, the know.
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates, because knowledge is power. Visit progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.